Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 22.
So today, we're jumping into a fantastic piece from Journey to the West. We're looking specifically at that really dramatic scene at the Flowing Sands River.
A pivotal moment.
It really is. Our mission here is to sort of unpack this encounter, the huge river, the scary demon, and pull out the key bits of knowledge for you.
Yeah, this part of the story comes right after they've dealt with the Yellow Wind Ridge. So they're moving forward, but bam, another huge challenge.
And it's not just another monster initially. It's this physical barrier, the Flowing Sands River.
A massive one. And it immediately throws the Tang monk into despair.
Okay, so let's start there. They arrive, see this huge river, and the text says the monk is really distressed. No boats in sight.
Understandably so. He's on this vital quest, but faced with, well, basic logistics. How do you cross?
And Pigsy chimes in, right? He confirms it. Wild waves, no boat to cross, very direct.
Pigsy often brings that grounded perspective. He sees the practical problem straight away. It sets a pretty bleak tone.
It does. Then you have Monkey. His reaction is, well, typical Monkey.
Huh. Yes. He acknowledges it's tough, you know, for other people.
Right. He says truly difficult to cross, but then immediately follows up with how he could just zip across easily.
That contrast is key, isn't it? His immense power doesn't automatically solve the group's problem, especially when the monk is, well, mortal and can't fly on clouds.
It really highlights the group dynamic early on. Individual skill isn't always the whole answer.
Definitely not. And the scale of this river, they make a point of that. Monkey estimates the width.
Yeah. 800 lines, which is, what, hundreds of miles? That's enormous.
Almost unbelievably vast. And Pigsy, again being practical, asks, how do you even know that?
Good question.
And Monkey's answer about his eyesight seeing 1,000 line just reminds you, okay, we're in a mythical world here. Normal rules don't quite apply.
He says he flew up and checked it out, saw the whole length. So huge and seemingly endless.
And then they find that stone tablet. Flowing Sands River.
Ominous enough, but the description below it is even worse, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's where it gets really specific and worrying.
800 lay flowing sands boundary, 3,000 weak waters deep. Okay, 800 lay wide, 3,000 something deep.
But it's the next lines that are crucial. Goose feathers float not, reed catkins sink to the bottom.
Goose feathers, they're so light.
Exactly. This weak water concept is fascinating. It means the water itself offers no buoyancy. None at all.
So forget boats, even the lightest things just sink straight down.
Pretty much. It makes the river fundamentally impassable by normal means.
Okay.
It's not just wide. Its very nature prevents crossing. And just as they're absorbing this terrible news, things get worse.
As they often do in this story.
Out comes the demon, erupting from the waves. And the description. Wow. It's designed to be terrifying. Red flaming hair.
Uh-huh. Two round eyes, bright as lamps. A blue-black face.
A voice like thunder or an old dragon's roar. Just pure menace.
And he's wearing a goose yellow cassock. That seems odd.
It is odd, isn't it? A cassock is religious clothing. So him wearing it feels like a perversion, maybe hinting he's some kind of fallen figure.
Interesting point. And he's got 9 skulls hanging around his neck.
Yeah, that's not subtle. That's a pretty clear sign saying, I eat people.
Right.
Or at least, I defeat them and take trophies.
And he's carrying a formidable treasure staff, so he's armed and dangerous, obviously.
The treasure staff often implies some kind of significant, maybe even celestial, origin for the weapon. And by extension, maybe for him too.
Okay, so this terrifying figure appears, and what's the first thing he does?
He goes straight for the main prize. Tang Monk tries to grab him.
But Monkey's too fast, thankfully, pulls the monk back.
Instant reflexes. Monkey's always protective of his master, even if he complains about it later.
And then, surprisingly maybe, Pigsy steps up.
He does. Drops the luggage, which is saying something for Pigsy, and charges in with his 9-toothed rake.
That's actually quite brave, considering the monster they're facing.
It shows that beneath the laziness and gluttony, there is loyalty there. He attacks, the demon defends with his staff, and bam, fight scene on the riverbank.
And then we get that fascinating backstory drop. These two actually know each other.
Sort of, yeah. The text reveals Pigsy used to be Marshal Tianpeng, a celestial naval commander.
Right, commander of like 80,000 celestial sailors or something.
Something like that, yeah. And the demon. He was a curtain-lifting general in the Celestial Palace. Basically, a high-ranking attendant to the Jade Emperor.
So they were both big shots up in heaven before things went wrong for them.
Exactly. They once met in the Ling Xiao Palace. It adds this whole other layer to the fight. It's not just random monster versus pilgrim. There's history.
Does that change how they fight, do you think?
Hard to say from the description, but it definitely adds depth. It hints at fallen status, maybe shared resentment, or just recognizing a former colleague, I guess.
The fight itself sounds brutal. The description uses phrases like rake probing like a dragon's claw, staff parrying like an elephant grinding teeth.
Very visceral imagery. It's not elegant fencing. It's described as no head, no face grabbing, no random, no empty releasing.
Uh-huh.
It sounds chaotic and desperate.
Really powerful stuff. And it contrasts the demon who's been living there eating people for ages with Pigsy, who's now, you know, trying to protect the Dharma.
A nice juxtaposition of their current roles versus their pasts.
So they go at it for, what, 20 rounds?
About that, yeah. And it's a stalemate. Neither can get the upper hand.
Which is when Monkey starts getting impatient.
Of course. He's standing there, guarding the monk and the luggage, probably just itching to use his staff.
The text even says his palms were itching. Tanga Monk tries to hold him back.
But that's not likely to work for long with Monkey.
Nope. He leaps in, iron staff swinging, aiming right for the demon's head.
Big entrance. Monkey doesn't do subtle.
And the demon sees him coming and instantly dives back into the river. Smart move.
Very smart. He knows he's probably outmatched on land against both Pigsy and Monkey. The river is his turf.
But Pigsy is furious. He turns on Monkey.
Yeah, he really lays into him, doesn't he? Claims he was just about to win.
Says the demon was weakening, running out of moves, and Monkey spoiled his chance to capture him.
You can almost hear the frustration. Pigsy probably saw a chance for glory, you know, to prove himself, and Monkey just jumps in.
And Monkey's excuse is, well, it's priceless.
What does he say again?
He basically says he was bored, hasn't used his staff since the last monster, the Yellow Wind one, and he just misjudged the situation, thought the demon wasn't willing to play anymore.
Huh. Classic Monkey.
Yeah.
Completely missing the danger, or maybe just framing it in his own terms of combat as play. It's funny, but also shows his disconnect sometimes.
So the demons escaped back into the water, and Tang Monk makes the obvious but crucial point.
Which is?
That the demon knows the water. He's at home down there. They can't just fight him on his terms.
Exactly. The monk realizes they need someone who can handle the water to deal with this boundless, weak water if they have no boat.
It's a moment of clarity. Brute force on the bank isn't the answer.
Right. Monkey even agrees, quoting a saying about how your environment shapes you. They need a different approach. Maybe capture the demon to make him help them cross.
A tactical shift? And guess who immediately volunteers for water duty?
Let me guess. Pigsy.
You got it. But with a twist. He says Monkey should go capture the demon while he guards the monk.
Oh, Pigsy. Always looking for the angle. Offers help, but wants someone else to do the dangerous part first.
But then something really interesting happens. Monkey hesitates.
About going into the water. That is surprising.
Yeah. He actually admits he's not great underwater. He says he needs spells and transformations just to move around, that he's sort of clumsy down there compared to land or air.
Wow. That's a rare admission of weakness from Monkey. It shows even he has limits, specific environments where he's not the best.
A really important detail. He's confident everywhere else, but water's not his element.
So who is good in water?
Well, Pigsy immediately puffs himself up, starts boasting about his past life.
Marshal Tianpeng, commander of the Heavenly Navy.
Exactly. Says he commanded 80,000 sailors, knows all about water skills, makes himself sound like the perfect guy for the job.
Okay, setting himself up.
But then, almost in the same breath, he expresses fear. He worries the demon might have underwater friends or relatives who'll gang up on him.
Typical Pigsy. The boast followed immediately by the worry. A mix of pride in his past and very real fear in the present.
So it's kind of a mess. They need someone for the water. Monkey's not keen. Pigsy says he can do it, but is clearly nervous.
So what's the plan?
Monkey comes up with one. It's a bit devious. He tells Pigsy, go into the water, fight the demon, but deliberately lose. Lure the demon out of the water onto the bank again.
Use Pigsy as bait. Because the demon might get overconfident if he thinks he's winning against the former naval marshal.
Exactly. Lure him out. Then Monkey can jump in again on dry land where he is effective.
It's clever, risky, maybe relies a bit on Pigsy's acting skills.
And his willingness to take a beating, potentially. But Pigsy agrees.
He does, okay.
Yeah, so he takes off his outer robe, his shoes, grabs his rake.
He gets ready for a swim.
He parts the water, uses his old aquatic skills, and dives right in, plunges beneath the waves to find the demon.
He just wades into the river. No subtlety at all.
Huh, No, he starts like pushing the water around, making a scene.
And this totally surprises the monster who lives there.
Right, because the text mentions the monster had actually backed off before, so Pigsy's loud entrance is unexpected.
Catches him completely off guard, and the monster yells out something like, "Where's that monk going? Watch out for a beating."
A classic challenge, but probably born out of surprise, as you said.
And Pigsy, well, he's never one to back down, is he?
Not likely.
He fires right back, demanding to know who this guy is. You know, what kind of demon are you?
And he even throws in that offer, tell me your name and I'll spare you.
Yeah, tell me truthfully and I'll spare your life. The sheer confidence.
It's quite something. A bit much, maybe, but classic Pigsy.
And this leads to, well, something you don't see every day.
No kidding, a mid-battle monologue.
The monster launches into his life story.
It's incredibly detailed. You get this whole backstory right there in the middle of the confrontation. Very revealing.
He starts off really grandly, doesn't he? Born with extraordinary power, I have roamed across vast distances.
Yeah, painting himself as this, heroic figure almost, someone who's traveled the world, seen everything.
He talks about seeking enlightenment, carrying his robe and bowl.
Focusing on his spirit day in, day out. So it wasn't just wandering aimlessly, it was a quest.
A quest that led him to meet a true person, a spiritual guide.
Who then introduced him to internal cultivation practices.
And this is where the language gets really specific, really interesting. He uses these alchemical terms.
Right, like infant and maiden, wooden mother and metal father.
And kidney water entering the jade pond, liver fire investing in the heart. Oh, that's not typical monster talk.
Not at all. These are terms from Taoist internal alchemy. It's about balancing energies, yin and yang, elements within the body for spiritual transformation.
So the infant and maiden are yin and yang.
Basically, yes, fundamental energies. And wooden mother, metal father, those are symbolic too. The water and fire bit describes circulating vital essence.
Wow. So him using this language,
Yeah.
it means he was seriously into this stuff before.
It strongly suggests it, a deep involvement in spiritual practice, which makes his current state, as this river
A
demon.
much bigger fall from grace.
Exactly. It adds layers. It's not just a simple bad guy.
And then he claims he actually served in heaven.
Yes, he boasts about accumulating 3,000 merits, bowing before the Jade Emperor.
And being personally appointed as the curtain rolling general.
Which sounds pretty
He
important.
makes it sound very important. Respected within the Southern Gate, esteemed before the Hall of Miraculous Mist.
Definitely a high-ranking position, not just some celestial paper pusher. He had authority.
And the gear to match. He describes a tiger head at his waist,
A symbol of authority, yeah.
a demon subduing staff, a golden helmet reflecting sunlight, bright red armor.
He paints a picture of a powerful, decorated heavenly warrior, the full regalia.
So you have this esteemed general guarding heaven's gates. How does he end up here in the river eating people?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's quite tragic, actually.
What happened?
He says it was at the Queen Mother's peach banquet, huge celestial party,
Yeah.
and he accidentally dropped and broke a jade cup.
He broke a cup.
That's it.
Apparently, in the celestial court, that's a major offense. Sounds like the Jade Emperor was furious.
Furious enough to execute him.
That was the sentence. Stripped of rank, title, condemned to death.
Whoa. Over a cup.
Seems that way. Luckily for him, someone intervened. The barefoot immortal pleaded for his life.
Okay, so he wasn't executed,
Yeah.
but still punished.
Oh, yes. Banished. Exiled to the mortal realm, specifically to this river, the Flowing Sands River.
Quite the fall from heavenly general to river exile.
And his life now is a complete reversal of his past. He openly admits it.
Eating whoever comes by.
Yeah.
Woodcutters, fishermen.
He says, "Woodcutters who meet me lose their lives, fishermen who see me perish. I have eaten many." It's brutal.
A stark contrast to the spiritual seeker he described.
Absolutely. He's become the kind of being he probably used to fight against.
And then looking at Pigsy, he gets excited about, well, lunch.
He literally says, "Today, my belly has hope."
And threatens to chop Pigsy into mincemeat.
That's the final straw for Pigsy.
Understandably, being called rough. And then threatened like that.
Yeah, he explodes. "You vile thing. How dare you call me rough? Eat this rake of your ancestor."
You can just picture him fuming.
And bam, round two begins right there in the water.
And the description of this fight is amazing. It contrasts the curtain rolling general,
With Marshal Tien Peng, which was Pigsy's old heavenly title.
right, to former celestial bigwigs, now duking it out in a river.
The disgraced general with his staff versus the banished marshal with his rake. Former colleagues turned bitter enemies. It really shows how far both have fallen.
And the fight itself sounds incredibly violent. Total chaos in the river.
Oh, yeah. Ways like thunder, sun, and moon obscured.
And all the fish and turtles getting hurt. Bream, bass,
lost
their fresh scales, turtles, injured their tender shells, red shrimp and purple crabs all perished.
It's almost comical in its extremity, but it shows the immense power they both still wield, even in exile.
They just trashed the place.
Pretty much. A localized catastrophe, you could say.
And they fight for ages, right? Like 2 hours?
Yeah, a long time. And the text says, no clear winner or loser.
It uses that great analogy.
Yeah.
A copper basin meeting an iron broom? A jade chime against a golden bell?
Perfectly capturing it. Two equally matched, unyielding forces.
Okay, so while all this underwater chaos is happening,
yeah,
where's Monkey King? Sun Wukong.
He's watching from the shore.
Just watching. Why doesn't he help Pigsy out?
The text says he didn't want to interfere. Maybe sizing up the opponent, letting Pigsy handle it for a bit. It suggests some strategy.
Or maybe just enjoying the show.
Huh, possibly. But then Pigsy tries a tactic.
He fates a retreat. Tries to lure the monster towards the bank.
Exactly. But just as the monster gets close,
Monkey King jumps in, impatient as ever.
With his iron cudgel swinging. Classic monkey.
But the monster's not stupid.
No way. He sees Monkey King, recognizes the threat level is way higher, and zip, back into the deep water he goes.
Smart move. He knows when he's outmatched.
Which, of course, really annoys Pigsy.
Because his plan was working. He was trying to lure the monster onto land.
Right. He yells at Monkey, calls him an impatient monkey, basically says, you messed up my strategy.
He wanted to trap him on land, cut off his escape.
It was a decent plan, actually.
Yeah.
Take away the monster's home advantage. Shows Pigsy can be strategic sometimes.
But Monkey just laughs it off.
Pretty much. Idiot, don't shout, like calm down.
So they head back to the master.
To the Tang Monk, yeah.
Yeah.
Who's obviously worried. He greets them like, disciples, you've worked hard. You can feel his concern.
And Pigsy immediately gets back to the point. We have to beat this guy to cross the river.
No way around it.
Monkey King suggests they rest. And he offers to go get food, which seems helpful.
Until he claims the nearest village is, what, 5 or 6,000 lights away?
Yeah, an insane distance. And Pigsy's like, hang on a minute.
Because Monkey's back almost instantly.
He totally calls him out on it. How'd you get back so fast?
And Monkey reveals his secret weapon, the somersault cloud, the Jindu Yun.
Covering 108,000 lies in one jump. Incredible speed.
Which leads Pigsy to ask the obvious question.
If you're that fast, why not just zip the master across the river? Problem solved.
It seems logical, right?
But Monkey King gives a really important explanation here. It gets to the heart of the whole journey.
First, he says Pigsy can't carry the master because he's mortal, heavy like Mount Tai. But the bigger reason...
is that the master has to go through this.
Exactly. Monkey says, master must experience the different lands and cannot escape the sea of suffering, so every step is difficult.
So the hardships, the struggles, they're not things to be skipped. They're the point.
They're essential. Part of the spiritual process. You can't just shortcut your way to enlightenment.
Monkey says their job is just to protect him, keep him safe.
Right. We can only act as protectors. Ensure his body and life are safe, but we cannot substitute for these troubles.
They can't take the tests for him.
Or get the scriptures for him, even if they could fly straight to Buddha.
The Buddha wouldn't just hand them over.
Because, as Monkey says, what is easily obtained is easily disregarded. If it was easy, it wouldn't mean anything.
That's pretty deep. The value is in the struggle itself.
It really is. It reframes the entire pilgrimage. The journey is the transformation.
And Pigsy actually accepts this.
He does. Seems like he gets it. And so... they decide to camp by the river for the night.
Resigned to facing this challenge properly tomorrow.
Yeah. Next morning, Tang Senzang is looking to Wukong like, okay, smart guy, what now?
And Wukong, always direct, basically says, Baji, you're up again, back in the river.
Poor Baji.
I know. Yeah. But Wukong does promise he'll try to be more patient this time. And he'll watch from the bank, make sure the monster doesn't just, you know, disappear.
Right. So Baji... probably not thrilled, grabs his rake, the pant, and heads back into the water.
And the monster is instantly alert, ready for round two.
Yeah, and they clash again. Baji's rake against the monster's staff, the Baozhang.
But the staff This is where the details get really, really interesting, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. This is not just some stick he found. The source goes deep on its origins.
It says it was originally a laurel branch from the moon.
Mm-hmm. Cut down by Wu Gang, you know, the guy forever chopping that self-healing tree.
The punishment, right? So, lunar origins.
And then crafted by Lu Ban, the master craftsman, the patron saint of carpenters. So you've got celestial material and legendary skill involved in making this thing.
It tells you straight away, this weapon is special.
And there's more. It's called the treasure staff for subduing demons. It apparently has a golden as-you-wish hoop inside it.
Suggesting power, maybe transformation?
Could be. And it's decorated with, like, myriad pearl threads outside. Its whole purpose was guarding the celestial palace and keeping demons in line.
So this weapon signifies real authority, a connection to the heavens.
Which tells us a lot about the monster, too. He wasn't just some random river spirit.
No, he was a celestial general. The Jade Emperor gave him this staff.
Wow. Okay.
And it could change size. It was present at the big heavenly banquets, the peach ones.
The peaches of immortality, right?
Attended court. He even guarded the palace doors with it. Immortals apparently bowed when they saw it.
So this is a weapon with serious history. And the monster wielding it clearly had a major fall from grace.
Definitely. Which makes the monster's insult to Baji even funnier in a way.
What does he say?
He basically calls Baji's weapon a rusty nail rake.
Ouch.
Says it's only good for farm work.
Okay. Shots fired. But Baji gives it back, right?
Oh, yeah. Baji threatens him pretty colorfully about needing plaster and worrying about tetanus from his rake.
Huh. Gotta love Baji. Even with his rustic weapon.
So the fight restarts underwater, whirling staff, thrusting rake. They fight for 30 rounds, and there's no clear winner.
Which says something about the monster's actual fighting skill, doesn't it? And maybe Baji's tougher than he looks. Definitely. It's not a total walkover. But then Baji tries something clever.
Or maybe just tired. He feigns a retreat, drags his rake away.
And the monster goes after him, pursues him right to the riverbank.
But stops short.
Yeah. This is where the monster shows he's learning. He won't come ashore. He suspects Wukong is waiting to jump him.
He's gotten slippery, as Wukong calls him later. He knows Wukong's power.
Smart move, really. Keep the fight on his home turf, in the water.
Meanwhile, Wukong on the bank is just losing it.
Impatient Monkey King.
Totally. He even tells Tang Sanzang he'll just handle it like a hungry eagle preying on the monster.
Yeah.
Very dramatic.
Classic Wukong. So he tries to attack.
He does. He leaps into the air, ready to strike. But the second the monster senses him, poof.
Back into the river depths.
Gone. Wukong realizes, okay, this guy is deliberately avoiding a fight on land. My usual power move won't work here.
And Baji, he's had enough.
Yeah, he's exhausted.
Huh.
Admits it was basically a drawdown there. Says he was just managing to hold his own.
So, stalemate. The monster is too strong and too clever in the water for Baji and too evasive for Wukong.
Exactly. Kang Sanzang is worried, naturally. What now?
And it's Wukong who comes up with the next idea, a different approach.
Let's not fight harder, let's fight smarter. Or get someone else to fight.
Pretty much. He suggests gonna get help from Guanyin Bodhisattva.
The Bodhisattva of Compassion. Makes sense.
Perfect sense. Wukong reasons that she started this whole quest, she assigned them their roles.
And she's helped them out of tight spots before.
Exactly. If anyone can figure out how to deal with this river monster problem, it's probably her.
It's kind of an admission, isn't it? That even with Wukong's power and Baji's persistence, they're stuck.
It is. It shows their limitations against certain kinds of obstacles. This journey isn't just about brute strength.
And I liked Baji's reaction. He agrees. And ask Wukong to pass on his respects to Guanyin.
Yeah, much obliged for past guidance. A nice moment of humility from him.
Shows gratitude, even when he's probably aching all over.
So Tang Sanzang gives the okay. Tells Wukong to go quickly.
So Monkey, he takes off. Decides to seek divine intervention.
Right, from Guanyin Bodhisattva.
Exactly. And the story makes a point of how fast he goes. Like half an hour to Patua Mountain. It really stresses the urgency.
Wow, okay. Talk about needing an answer fast.
You bet.
So Monkey gets there, explains the problem to Guanyin, the river, the monster, how Pigsy keeps losing.
But Guanyin, well, she's wise. She already gets it. And crucially, she knows who this monster really is.
Ah, okay. Here comes the reveal.
Yeah, this is where it flips. She says the monster is actually General Rolling Curtain, Huanlian Dajiang.
From heaven.
Yes. Banished for some celestial screw-up. Broke a crystal cup or something.
Okay.
But here's the kicker. Guan Yin's already been involved. She's been guiding this guy, telling him to wait for guess who?
The scripture seekers.
Exactly. He's supposed to be helping them.
No way. So the whole fight was pointless.
Pretty much. It completely reframes everything. The solution isn't fighting, it's understanding.
Mm-hmm.
He's hostile because he doesn't know who they are.
Wow. So the crucial missing piece, it was just basic information. They hadn't identified themselves or their purpose.
Right. He just sees them as random intruders messing around in his river. It just goes to show, doesn't it? How many problems boil down to just not understanding each other?
Okay, mind blown a little bit there. So the solution isn't more fighting, it's context, communication.
Precisely. So Guan Yin lays out the plan. She sends her own disciple, Huiyan also called Mucha, down with a specific item, a red gourd.
A gourd, not like a super weapon.
Nope, not a weapon. It's meant to be part of a boat, a special kind of boat, a law boat. Over in Chuan to get them across the river.
A law boat. Interesting. So a totally different approach. Not fighting the river, but navigating it.
Exactly. Working with the situation, not against it. And the gourd's just one piece.
Right. There's something else. Oh, the skulls.
Yes. The nine skulls the monster wears around his neck. Grim detail, right?
Yeah, seriously. They're from his previous victims.
Apparently so.
Mm-hmm.
But Guan Yin says they need those skulls. They have to be arranged in a specific pattern, a nine palace formation, around the gourd. That's what makes the boat work.
Huh. Using the remnants of past failures to build the way forward. That's kind of symbolic, isn't it?
It really is. Turning something negative into the key to progress.
So Huiyan shows up with this gourd, meets Tang Monk and the others.
Mm.
And Pixie, surprisingly, he recognizes Huiyan. And he's actually polite, mentions Guan Yin's earlier guidance.
Yeah, it shows, Pixie knows when to, you know, show some respect, especially when help arrives. He might be a bit rough, but he gets it.
So there's a bit of awareness there.
Definitely. And then Monkey, the direct one, just says, right, summon the monster.
Huh, just like that.
Yep. And Tang Monk is, understandably, a bit like, who exactly are we calling over here?
I bet. After all that fighting, let's invite him over.
Exactly. So they've tried force, it failed. Now they're trying wisdom, communication, guided by Guan Yin.
Okay, so Huiyan goes to the riverbank, calls out to the monster, but he doesn't just yell, right?
No. Crucially, he uses the monster's ordained Buddhist name, Wu Jing, and he announces, the scripture seekers have arrived. This is the game changer, the missing information.
Finally, telling him who they are and why they're there.
And the effect is immediate. The monster, who was apparently hiding because he was still scared of Monkey.
Can't blame him there.
Right. But when he hears his name, Wu Jing and Scripture Seekers, the fear just vanishes. The text says he drops his fear of weapons, comes right out.
Wow.
And he greets Huiyan respectfully, asks after Guan Yin. It's a total transformation just based on that one piece of information.
Incredible. Night and day, just like that. All because he finally understands why they're there.
Exactly. So Huiyan tells him the plan. You need to join Tang Monk. Use your skulls. Use this gourd. Make the boat.
Does he hesitate at all? I mean, he just fought Pigsy three times. He's probably still wary of Monkey.
He is a bit, yeah. The text mentions he's still got a negative view of Pigsy, calls him names, and he's definitely cautious about Monkey's power. Old conflicts don't just disappear instantly.
True. You need reassurance.
And Huiyan provides it. He says basically, look, these guys, Pigsy and Monkey, they're your fellow disciples now. Guan Yin's guiding them too.
Ah, establishing that common ground, shared purpose.
Exactly. We're all on the same team, working towards the same goal, guided by the same power.
And that does it.
That does it. The monster Wu Jing, he gets it. He completely surrenders, drops his weapon, this treasured staff.
His Pyodhang.
Right. And he formally greets Tang Monk, apologizes, says, sorry, I didn't recognize you.
And Pigsy, he must have something to say.
Oh, absolutely. Pigsy jumps in with something like, see, all that fighting was for nothing. Classic Pigsy.
Uh-huh. Always has to get a word in.
But it lets Monkey clarify the reason for the fight, he points out. It's because we didn't say who we were.
Owning their part in the misunderstanding, that's important too.
Very. It's a powerful lesson, isn't it? How much trouble comes from just not communicating clearly, assuming things.
Definitely. So Tang Monk, being the compassionate one,
he accepts Wu Jing's apology. Welcomes him, and then he performs the ordination ceremony, shaves his head, gives him his full monastic name, Sha Monk, or Sha Hershang, The sand monk?
From fearsome river monster to devoted disciple, just like that, all through understanding.
Incredible transformation. And Sean Monk, he doesn't mess around. He gets right to it.
Yeah.
Immediately takes the 9 skulls, the gourd, arranges them just as Hyeon instructed, and poof, there's the law mode.
Ready to go.
Ready to go. Tangwon gets on board. The story emphasizes how stable it is. Not like the treacherous river at all.
And his disciples are right there with him.
Yep. Pigsy and Sha Monk supporting him. Monkey leading the horse onto the boat. Even Huiyan is there, yeah, sort of guarding them. Teamwork, finally.
And they just sail across.
They cross the Flowing Sands River safely. No more problem.
What happens to the boat? The skulls and gourd?
This is another really neat symbolic moment. As soon as they reach the far bank, the 9 skulls just dissolve.
Dissolve.
Yeah, into 9 gusts of dark wind. Vanished. Now they've overcome it the right way.
Wow. That's powerful. The physical remnants of the problem disappear once the underlying issue, the lack of understanding, is fixed.
Exactly. It signifies the end of that specific trial. They express their gratitude, Huiyan heads back, and the journey continues. But now, with a new, very capable team member.
Okay, so let's wrap this up for our listener. What are the big takeaways here? I mean, the first one seems blindingly obvious now.
Communication.
Right.
Just clear, honest communication. If they just said, hey, we're the scripture seekers, right at the start.
Could have saved everyone a lot of trouble, a lot of fighting.
Definitely. And also the value of knowing when to ask for help, right?
Yeah.
Seeking guidance when you're stuck.
Mm-hmm. They couldn't muscle through it, so they went to Guanyin.
And maybe the most surprising bit, allies can come from really unexpected places. Who'd have thought the scary monster was actually meant to be on their team?